Okay, now today was a Tuesday, and we are going to have the weekly scheduled discussion, and in English medium. Welcome everyone for the discussion. We have almost 1 hour, and we have already assigned the topic. So before going to that traditional assigned topic, if someone is willing to or wishing to have any comments or this topic, any interview report, I cordially invite before going to the main topic.
Sorry, Bhante, we have not received any reports for today's session, Bhante.
So then we can start the our assigned topic. So I would like to invite Venerable Buddharakhita. And Buddharakhita is going to go to Ireland. So today is the last day, if he is not going to come back. I hope he will come back. Anyway, you are listening to Uddarakita's voice for the last time.
I don't think so. I hope not, anyway. So this is on old age, and it's from the Sutta Nipada, the Jara Sutta. And I'm going to start from the third verse. Whenever a person conceives thus, this is mine, that too is abandoned at death. Having understood this, a wise one, my follower, should not incline to take things as mine. Just as on awakening a person does not see whatever was encountered in a dream, so too does not see a beloved person who has died and passed away. Although those people were seen and heard and were known by such and such a name, when a person has passed away, the name alone remains to be uttered. So this is a very interesting point that the Buddha makes here, that nothing but maybe even just the memory of the name of the person is left after they pass away. And there's a famous modern philosopher named Douglas Hofstadter, and his wife died, and he wrote a big, long philosophical book about this idea that as long as the family members and the people who knew the person, as long as they were alive to remember their name, that the person was living on, and that this was a very comforting idea to him. But I must say I prefer the Sri Lankan attitude towards death, where people don't try to build too many memorials to their past relatives. Maybe they just offer a dana and stuff like that. But it's very noticeable in my own home country that there'll be cemeteries all over the country, and these monuments to the people who have died and passed on. And, you know, sometimes you can't even read the name on the stone. But, you know, people like going into these cemeteries and looking for the names and looking for relatives, and sort of nostalgic feeling. But as the sutta here says, that there is nothing remaining but their name. And again, the Buddha points to this core concept that you repeatedly see in Buddhism about conceitedness, that this is mine, that even this is mine is abandoned at death. And the Chinese have an expression which is like, you should give with a warm hand and not with a cold hand. So this is in reference to doing acts of generosity. Sometimes we leave it to our will or to our family members to do acts of generosity after our death. But I always remember there was a great monk in Burma, and his father was being praised, saying, "Oh, you know how wonderful it is to have such a great son as a bhikkhu." And he said, "Well, I'll rely upon my own karma, my own good karma." So in life, we have the opportunity to do acts of generosity in body, speech, and mind, and that this will really be of benefit to us in this life and in future lives. Whereas, you know, the remnants that we can't part with, no matter what they are, we will have to part with them at death. And what we carry from one life to the next is this sort of accumulation of proclivities or tendencies. So as I mentioned the last time, you know, the 14th Dalai Lama is not the same as the 13th Dalai Lama, but they rhyme. You know, there's a rhyme between the 14th and the 13th Dalai Lama. And that rhyme is around certain habits and proclivities and tendencies. And, you know, it's very interesting to, you know, whenever I hear these people who have become very rich and successful, you know, some these tech billionaires or something like that, I'm always listening out to hear if they mention whether they were lucky or not in life. You know, do they think that they were so clever that they came into such wealth in this life? Or was it because of, you know, the past deeds and past actions, you know, that they recognize that they have been lucky in life? So I always find that that's a very important, for me personally, it's a very important acknowledgement that we need to make, that we have been lucky, that we have done good deeds in the past, and that, you know, I don't take for granted the opportunity to live here in Nisaranawana, and I don't take for granted the, you know, the benevolence and the opportunity that it is for me to live here in Sri Lanka. You know, I know many of you are overseas and migrated and didn't have the opportunity to live and work here. I had a similar situation with my home country in Ireland, so I'm visiting it, but it's a country I can't live or stay in. And that's maybe because of my own lack of good deeds in the past. Or you know, I have a blood family, but I don't have a Dhamma family in Ireland. Whereas when I stay here in Sri Lanka, I don't have blood family, but I do have Dhamma family. And this teaching about blood family and Dhamma family was something that Pandita Syaida used to like mention every time as a greeting. Whenever he would meet me, he would mention, oh, well, you know, we're Dhamma family. So if I asked, requested for something, he would say, you know, that he would point out to distinguish between the blood family and the Dhamma family, and that I was entitled to a certain support as a Sangha, and he was very generous to me in that way. And so, you know, everything we forget. We forget the previous lives, and we fail to acknowledge. Sometimes I even think to myself, I express a gratitude to my the former self, to remind myself that if I enjoy good things in this life, it is because of the effort of my former self, and that I shouldn't let my former self down, and that I should, you know, I should build the capital on my previous efforts, and keep moving forward in the sasana, not move backwards. So this is a thought that I have. And so like when the Buddha says here that this is mine, that too is abandoned at death. But we do carry our karma from one life to the next, even if we have to leave everything else behind. But anyway, we'll enjoy listening to what Mahathiro has to say.
So that I think everything is... rotating around that, why we are forgetting about the past, why we are not planning the future, because we wish to entertain the present moment. So therefore, forgetting past and not entertaining future has a pragmatic value. As far as you are keeping the mind in the present moment, well, principally you are showing, you are depicting the way of life. But even if you are not attached to the past and the future, and still if you are not mindful, not purpose is not served. So therefore, there should have a thesis. Antithesis is the past and the future. Thesis is to be here and now. So therefore, whenever you can philosophically say past is wrong, so blah, blah, blah. Future is wrong, blah, blah, blah. But whenever you are be here, it's a silent sermon. No philosophical justification. And we can understand when you go to a Chinese cemetery, there's huge buildings they are putting up for their ancestors. Ancestors Day. And when you go to the Taj Mahal, they spend all Indian money to put up it, and the bankruptcy happened. And the father was hijacked by the son, and he got the kingship. But he's fanatic about the Mumtaz Mahal, preparing this Taj Mahal, and still it's a great monument. But Buddha himself told, even after my death, do the due respect and do it. But my point is, in this very life, be here and now. So philosophy is not important, but young children below 6, always in the here and now, they won't get the benefit. Buddha is not facing them. Because philosophically they can argue. We are here and now, we are better off. Because they don't have any other defilement. They don't have any alternative. But we people, passing that pure life up to the 6, and from 6 to now onward, we know how much we can mess it with the past and the future, and the cost. The impact is very, very substantial. Frustration and the tension. And whenever now if we go to the childhood life, beginner's mind, then we can see how simple to come here and live in present moment. Philosophically you can prove, not the past, not the future, but in the present. But being in the present moment one split second is much, much, much valuable than all the kind of thing. So there are a lot of philosophers and a lot of people, they do value present moment, but with the muddled mind. Not with the touch of the present moment. So Western philosophy is a shit. Because if you are in the present moment, then you can't think. You can't philosophize. Simply as that. So anything coming from that kind of a wrong source is definitely wrong. I mean, it's wrong, but comparatively we can understand how much people are happy with that kind of ideas. We are proliferating. We are prolific. Because people want to be amazed, forget about the present, and be about the philosophy, the past, and the history, and the future, and the atomic physics, and all the kind of thing. They lose. And when you come to the present moment, you are fully endowed. You are fully contented. And therefore, I read a lot. Because I have some respect to the Western psychology, maybe due to my lack of understanding, and philosophy, because it proves me, I am being a bumpkin coming from the village, how lucky I am. I need no any philosophy to tell. I am a contented person, born enlightened. Born enlightened, even the third world country. I am not, I am below average economy. Education-wise, I don't know, it's a very good gene. We can learn. And even in my family standard, I'm below average. And Venerable Dhammika, he hit me, he kicked me. He told, you fool. Sri Lankans are utter fools. They are looking to the overseas, expecting this and that. We are coming from all the way. You bloody fellows don't know mindfulness. You fellows don't know diligence. And you are making tallest building. Chetia and Pinkama, all the kind of thing. I mean, it is good. You can do it with the correct understanding. But why you are forgetting about the past? Why you are trying to forget about the Jara? Jara is everlasting happening. But while Jara is happening, you can be mindful. Jara is not so powerful. So Jarasutta is not so important. But even when you are getting old age and sick and everything, still you can be mindful. Even in an accident, even the drug addicts, even the cancer, terminal patients, I mean, they are the most important jara that is called malevolent tumor, consuming. And that is the best example for jara. Cancer cells are very fast. Still they can be mindful. So therefore, some people view jara is very important because they are self-mortification type. Some people say, forget about the jara, be here and now and throw away parties and come. I mean, they are self-indulgence, sense pleasure. But both no harm, both no harm or less harm if you do it mindfully. Definitely slow, you'll come back to the center, not at the beginning. At the beginning, still you may be self-mortification type or you may be self-indulgence type. But even then, try to be mindful and then slowly, slowly you come back and you see dissociation with the socialized people with the two extremes. So that is something verifiable within 7 years. Maximum 7 years. You can be utterly with the self-mortification type of people, no harm, you have to tell. That is good because you are doing the experiment and I can share the results. They are very generous. And he just mentioned, and there's a Sanskrit slok, I can't remember, stingy people, they never give anything. Accumulate and ultimately give it cold-handed after the death. And the Chinese says, better give warm-handed, and I think cold-handed is much philosophical. You give without knowing. Jesus Christ says, when you give from the left hand, you can't feel in the right hand. That's a phrase, I don't know.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah. And therefore, what I'm telling is, if you can give it up without knowing the destiny, that is what arahanthood. But if you're going gradually, nothing much you have to give because slowly, slowly given up. But if you get a quick enlightenment, everything given, just like a death. You don't know where it is going. And that is asankarika. No plan, no future. And you just give up. So Sanskrit, this thing it says, that those stingy people are the most generous people on the earth. So they keep everything and at the death, everything goes to the unwanted people. Appiyadayada is the Buddha says. I mean, they know. Still they are not consuming, still not giving warm-handed. And they are cold-handed. So much of property. Ultimately they become a property on the earth. As you are earning only 6 feet burial ground, Leo Tolstoy. Earning so much of lands, you will be a king. Ultimately, what is the you need is a burial ground or it's a cremation. That's all. So therefore, that is also something vipassana. You give to the unknown person. It's an accident. It's a disappointment. But they know. But the meritorious people give with the warm hand, they give little by little. They are very stingy. Giving little by little and accumulating, they are very, very stingy. So the agama, Buddha agama, it says, give slowly, slowly, as much as possible, so accumulating the merits. You're giving up properties. But the stingy fellow give up in bulk, the wholesale. And before the death, if he knows, definitely it is going to unwanted child, unwanted people, or the government will confiscate. So, what a kind of generosity. So they are genuinely, they are not artificial, just give up. So therefore each and everything, you can philosophize and say there's aesthetically something, philosophically something, politically something, economically something, but there are some other meeting ends at the end. All the opposites are meeting together. So therefore, philosophically this is very nice because explain, even after the death, in Sri Lanka we keep the relationship. We call mother, we call father. But in the West, if the mother is available, father is not available, single parent children. They don't know their father. They don't know their siblings. And one person that came and told, there's one lady in UK, 7 children, 7 fathers. And each father gave a birthday party, birthday gift to his own child. And others are looking at, this father is not my father, but my siblings. Because a single mother, 7 fathers. I mean, she told that it has not happened in Sri Lanka, recorded, maybe. But this is what it happens. Very civilized people. Legally nothing wrong. And how children can make up their mind? living in one single family, mother, father. While living, they don't have a father. But in Sri Lanka, even after the death, my mother used to give dana after 10 years to husband, and we get together. Then the chief monk at the monastery told, not necessary. It is enough. I know Mama, I know the uncle, and he's done a good job. He's a good person. Amma, don't worry, don't give dana, enough. Now sometimes I give sermons. Father passed away 35 years ago. Still the parents, still the children give dana. I don't discourage them. I said, never mind. I don't say it's a childish game. But that is the way they feel comfortable. By michaditti. That is not appreciable thing. You mind your business. Be mindful. That is much, much, much greater than making a Taj Mahal to the wife and all the kind of thing. I mean, you may do something like war symmetry, you see, nicely put into this thing. There are no coffins or nothing. This thing, places are there, and the tablets are there in form. And Canada, they found some burial grounds, no, how do you call, stones, fitting the memorial stones. How do you call it? Tablets? Fixing? Tombs. And because the church killed the children, 200 old children killed and buried, no tombs. They unearthed and these unlabeled tombs. So all these killers are making these rituals. They are killers. The other people make tombs and all the kind of thing. And we are born alone. We are died alone. Buddha born under the tree and died under the tree. Finished. So instead we make big how. So I very young, when we are very, very young, my brother and myself sleeping together. So always frightening me. He says when the lay people died, you throw into the carcass into the burial ground or the carnal ground, and yakkas will come and eat you. Unseen beings and coming and eat your corpse. What a dirty thing. Then if you are a monk, corpse is not there, it will be cremated. So therefore becoming monk is very good because your thing will be taken care after the death. So I was waiting to become a monk. My carcass will not be eaten by dogs and this thing. Ultimately, father decided to make him a monk. And the village temple came. He's very wise and kind. Ultimately, he married and he's having 4 children now. So I am the person who is supposed to be eaten the carcass, but I became a monk. So I know how much he is conditioning me. Because I'm a naughty fellow. And he knows definitely I am a lay person, I am a putujjana, he will be a monk one day. And all the sisters protested, telling, no, I can't give my brother. And that is why I came and ordained as a conspiracy. It's a secret. I never told them, because if it is so, they will come and tell they are talking with nonsense. So I did it for mindfulness, living here and now. Not to worry about the past or future. But whenever I go to a ceremony, what do you need? Ah, yes, this is for your dead father. Okay, may their baby merit for the father, blah, 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 blah. Then I say, mind your own business also. Mind your business also. Therefore, Jarasutta is for me, it's a self-mortification type. And many people are happy with that, Vijaya Sutta, Jara Sutta, Anathapindika Vada Sutta. I mean, they are developing urge for the people to make a kind of a shake. I said, no, I need no any kind of that jerk. I always try to, even with the happy thing, even the sad thing, mindfulness give me a very nice middle combination. People may say I am a sensuous pleasure person. Others may say I am a self-mortification type, according to their view. But I find a kind of an equilibrium, changing from the one corner to the other, but anyway advancing. Therefore, I not throw away Jarasutta. It is talking about day by day you are deteriorating. Old age and the developing, becoming a youth, also deterioration. And that happens. So I need no any urge to tell it. Whenever I cut my hand or when I hit something, I feel it. That's enough. So therefore, this all the philosophical development, specifically not in the Gatha, but in the stanza, the same very stanza, I will just read the single translation. Maranena pitang pahiyati, yang puriso mamidanti manyati, etan disvana pandito na mamattaya nameta mamako. That is the verse. And it says, yam... Purusa yam rupadhyak mageyai manjanavasyen hangane nam, if anyone taking the materialistic thing as me, e maraninudu durukan labe, after the death that is gone. It's a fact, single fact. Buddha di kere mamako upanditame, anyone who is telling the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha is me, or triple gem, that part is given by the commentator. It is not in the sutta. The pandita, the known person, and he defined the characteristic of pandita, he says, Buddha Dhamma Sangha is my, me, not the materialist, not the sensuous pleasure. Rupadhyay tila adhina vedaka mamatyeta nonamenye. Such a person will never incline to the materialistic pressure. But such a notion is not in the Gatha. It is Pandita. Pandita is a known person, I mean enlightened person. He don't go for the trivial things like materiality. So today whole world engulf in the materiality and find the answers within the materiality. So they are not happy to accept the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. And then what a joke to follow them. Knowing, we know. They are within the materiality and they think... The materiality development, scientific development, technology development will give an answer. No, it give a question day by day. We have to answer. The question is because of materiality, the materiality, technology and the science, so-called science. But the Buddha also scientist. It's also technical thing. You bloody fellows don't like to be mindful. They consider it as a religious. They wanted to have some... materialistic kind of thing. So whole world inclined. The corona, the climatological crisis, political problems, all kind of thing. They are UN, WHO, everything. Searching. Lucky enough now they want to see how the mindfulness and the climatic changes. New source. So I am so happy at least they are considering this. Mindfulness, not in a non-religious, even in the non-religious basis, because it's given a completely different source, different way. So therefore the Jara, whenever they are going to explain the Pandita and the fool and the wise, they say those who are believing Buddha Dhamma Sangha is wise, others are not. But the Sutta don't say like that. They say Pandita is Pandita. He defined. The commentator is defined, it is biased, it is Buddhist. Of course it is Buddhist, yes. But you can see the wise person never get inclined. Unwise people always incline. So these kind of thing is misleading. It says only the Buddhist can be wise. Because he is believing Buddha. Just not by believing Buddha you can be wise. You have to practice it. All the Buddhists are not following what the Buddha is telling. So that is why even people are against mindfulness. This is mindfulness is not Buddhist. So that is what I would like to share with you. You may proceed, please. I went to the third one, 810. Maranena pitam pahiyati. Now today read fifth one. Sixth one. So I went to the third one. Yeah. That is also misinterpreted. That is my point.
I started with the third one, but I read three.
Today.
Yeah.
Third one is what I translated. Supinene pi yatapi sangatang, patibuddho purishona passati, evampi piyayitang, janang, petang kalakatang na passati. People, when you are dreaming, they see the moon and the sun. But when we wake up, no moon, no sun. Like that, Pallogika, anyone can't see those who are dead and gone. So you can believe they are there. You can believe they are not there. Just like something dreamt. So that is the number four. Number six, Dittapi sutapi te jana yesan nama midang bhauchati. Nama mevava sissati akheya petas jantuno. Anyone for the royal family or the lowly family, they are just convenience or conventional names, kings and the kind of thing, conventional. They are also happening from the earth element, fire, water element, kind of just elements. You are familiar with the low-class family or high-class family. After the death, no witness from the materiality, only you get the name. Name left. Such a person was there, and he was so-and-so. But there is nothing remaining for to show he was like that unless the tomb. So this is like mimicking, like magic, like a mythical show. So therefore, it's so transient. So that is number six.
So those who are greedy for personal assets do not escape sorrow, lamentation, and miserliness. Therefore, the Munis, seers of security, having wandered, having abandoned possessions. When a bhikkhu lives withdrawn, resorting to a secluded seat, they say it is appropriate for him not to show himself in a fixed dwelling. The Muni is not dependent on anything. He takes nothing as pleasing, nothing as displeasing. Lamentation and miserliness do not stick to him as water does not stick to a leaf. Just as a water drop does not stick to a lotus leaf or water to the lotus flower, so the Muni does not cling to anything among the seen, heard or sensed. One cleansed does not thereby conceive things seen, heard or sensed. He does not wish for purification by another, for he becomes neither passionate nor dispassionate. So in this phase of the sutta, in this last five sections here, the Buddha is emphasizing the difference between, you know, the stark contrast between somebody who is greedy, who tries to accumulate wealth and build up wealth, whereas the Munis are the wise ones. They obtain a security that is a different kind of security, not the security of wealth, and it is a security that is achieved through abandonment of possession. And he describes the different qualities of what this kind of a person or a bhikkhu looks like, or how they are, and they're in stark contrast to the material kind of model that you need property or you need privilege or you need status. Instead, this monk is withdrawn, resorting to a secluded seat, and doesn't even appear near a fixed dwelling, and that the Muni is not dependent on anything and doesn't finds nothing pleasing nor displeasing. Lamentation and miserliness do not stick to him, just as water doesn't stick to the leaf, or that water doesn't stick to a lotus leaf, or so they don't cling to anything that is seen, heard or sensed. One cleansed does not therefore conceive things seen, heard, or cleansed. One does not wish for purification by another. So in this way, that this is the self-purification path of how the Buddha teaches, that we enlighten ourselves, but we follow the way of the Tathagata. So this is how we gain the true wealth as a bhikkhu. So this is very much in stark contrast to the model of the world that we have. And as Mahathera was pointing out, in this present time, which is a very materialistic time, you know, one is judged by one's possessions, one's status, one's postcode, and so forth. So this kind of teaching about death is a very stark reminder of the ultimate reality that we will all die one day, and that whether we give with a warm hand or give with a cold hand, we will either way we will be parted from our possessions. As said in the third verse, whatever we conceive as this is mine will be abandoned at death. And but the Buddha is always positive. Like, he presents the negative situation that materiality, you know, will be separated from the owner at death. But with the Muni, with the wise person, with the Pandita, they instead don't cultivate this possessiveness in life, and instead develop dispassion, where they become neither passionate nor dispassionate towards things. And this is the true path of purification. So it is this ancient tradition that we have in Buddhism of Marana Nusati or Jarana Nusati, reflecting on death, on old age. And as I remembered last time, I think we said, again, this was the key thing that was missing from the Bodhisattva, that he needed to see old age, sickness and death to be impelled back onto the spiritual path, and to make the final, you know, effort to become fully self-enlightened. So I do find it helpful occasionally to reflect on Jara, on the my own advancing age, on the deterioration in my health or in my body or in my aging, or the aging of my people that I you know, hold beloved, or is what's quite interesting, I must say, has been, you know, the relationship I've had with senior teachers in the Dhamma, and when they pass away, like particularly when Upandita Syara passed away, it was a very impactful experience for me, you know, different to the passing away of my own father, very different, but you know, I really just felt sad when Pandita Syaro passed away. Sad in the sense that it was a happy day for him, but it was a loss for myself. That was my feeling at the time. But also just a profound sense of gratitude for the benefit that he had brought into my life. And it was a very direct experience when I heard of his passing. And I can remember it very clearly, that occasion, that moment. And it was very particular. We were about to celebrate a new year, actually, in the Thai new year. But it wasn't exactly on the date. We were doing a celebration, a public celebration. And it was on a weekend in Ireland, of all the places. And you know, we had this gathering of migrants, of Thai people in particular, who were celebrating New Year. And I heard of his passing. And it's very interesting when a Muni does pass away, you know, that we sort of, that their gift has been like whatever teachings we picked up from them. And that's what we make a monument of inside our own heart, in a way. So it's very striking, the difference between normal wealth, material wealth, and the wealth that is spiritual wealth. And I do find it occasionally helpful to reflect on Jara, on death, and give that impetus into my practice, and to appreciate the efforts that I'm making, and to appreciate that I do follow the prescription here of not really having fixed dwellings. I don't even have a fixed, you know, fixed country, in a way.
and that to be dependent on nothing in particular has been it's a great discipline that one has to kind of surrender to whatever the situation is, and to be neither pleased nor displeased with whatever is happening, to not lament and not to be miserly about things. So just as we mentioned earlier on, I'm preparing to travel overseas, so I had to I prepared my hut so that other monks can stay in it while I'm away, and in this effort, you know, I had to like depossess myself of everything that I have and just you know, pack everything up and, you know, make space for somebody else to make use of the hut. So in this way, it's very practical that one is, you know, one becomes less possessive about one's items. Although, you know, if it's very useful, you obviously want to guard it as well as possible. But I don't overly accumulate. You know, that I have very little. I can put everything basically into one suitcase, and that's my life's wealth. So this is in contrast, stark contrast to all the friends that I have, who make a great effort to accumulate and build up their possessions, and then they point to these things whenever I'm there. And that's their status, and that's who they see themselves as. This is mine. This is me. Whereas I don't, you know, they don't see when I show up that's in fact, this is mine. This is me. Is standing right in front of them. So, you know, this reflection on Jara is I think quite important, and we can see why the Buddha mentioned it.
Yeah, Dharakita Hamduru is about to leave, so last time he sent me an article about the climatic changes and how it measurable and how it can be comprehensible. So I am critically stirring him to just give a little bit of his knowledge to share with us. Whatever measurable is bullshit, I would say. So climatic changes are happening. Immeasurable, no harm. Even the meditation is happening and its climate is affecting positively or negatively. So you can't measure. Long term, maybe. So therefore, John Lomberg, he says climatic changes is happening. It's not so significant. There are a lot of other significant things are there. So it has to have a due respect, but it is not mere conspiracy. Is something happening. But I put them a challenge. How do you measure? Do you feel any climatic changes here in Isranavani in Sri Lanka? Or do you feel outside world? Is it something due to human? This thing, President says, America, 1% temperature increase is due to the human activities. John Biden, the present president. Biden, and the state secretary also says we are decided to do it in 15 years time, but still we are not up to the mark. And Barack Obama says something. So whatever, we being monks, so even when we are meditating, we'll say something going to happen immediately, we immeasurable. Does that reduce the value of mindfulness? Or once it is measurable, put a research and kind of thing, is it added value or how it works? And towards that, he sent me an article, but last three times I tried to open it. It was impossible because I am traveling and very little data available. So before going, I would like to tap you for a few minutes. If you are cold, not the cold-handed, if you want to have the warm-handed generosity after your death, no. Now, would you like to share a little? It is utterly helpful for me.
So, you know, if we live a life that's 100 years, just like the sutta begins here, it talks about living a long life. Even if you live a long life, you will age. And my mother, one of the reasons I'm going to Ireland is it's my mother's 80th birthday, and this year she was quite affected by this. She broke her hip and went to hospital, and then she got coronavirus while at the hospital, and it was quite serious. And because of the lockdown, no family could go into the hospital. And at the time, I really had to reflect carefully on this aspect of Jara. And I felt quite at peace with should she pass away, that I didn't have any neglect of duty or care of duty towards my mother. But since she lived and is back and quite healthy and living independently, lives in her own house again, and it's her 80th birthday, and there was an alignment of stars that helped me to make this journey back to Ireland. And as it says here, to live, you know, not dependent on anything, but without that dependency, I have this remarkable, you know, good karma to be able to make this trip. And you know, it's we fail to, like, in my hut we don't have mirrors, and I don't look at myself in the mirror. But I had to take a selfie the other day for this part of the visa process. I had to take a selfie, and I was looking at the picture in the selfie, and I sort of saw an aspect of my father and my aunt in the picture, you know. And I could see a similarity, the family resemblance. And it sort of struck me, you know. And, you know, we need reflection at times. So as much as Mahatero likes to talk about sati and being mindful, the Buddha talks a lot about sati panya. So it's sati panya, and we have to ask ourselves the question, and this is the question I put to Mahatero the other day. He asked, how can I know here, standing here in Nisaranawana, that there is climate change? And my answer to him was that you can't. You know, we can know a lot of things standing here in Nisaranawana and in this present moment, but we can't see other things. So, for instance, Jara, we don't see Jara in the present moment. We actually see Jara through reflection and through panya, through wisdom. You know, because Jara is the accumulation of the life of changes. And it's a reflection, I see aspects of my father or my aunt in my complexion. That may be a momentary experience, but it is also a reflection and a memory and a connection with other information and a bringing together the accumulation. For instance, if I'm only mindful in the present moment, then I will be like the turkey. I don't know that Christmas is coming and I'm about to be slaughtered. You know, the food is good here on the farm, and the farmer is very nice to me, and every day is a wonderful day. That is the life of the turkey, but the turkey is also facing Christmas. And we should understand that we can only know these kind of effects like climate change through very, very careful reflection. And an aspect of Buddhism is its emphasis on right view. And this effort that we've been making to look at the Sutta Nipata has been my own effort in a way to accumulate right view, because I do get fed up of when I teach mindfulness to people, especially in the West, that they will say, oh, you know, mindfulness is natural and mindfulness is this and mindfulness is that. But they won't, you know, make the link that the Buddha has made between mindfulness and right view. And mindfulness is not actually a path factor. It's a sama sati, right mindfulness. As I often say to them, a cat is mindful, but that doesn't mean it's right mindful. So we need to be mindful of certain things, and Jara is one of the things that we do need to be mindful of, and that we're in a good climatic situation or we're in a good environment is very, very important. You know, as I mentioned earlier on, I don't find Ireland a suitable place for me to practice as a Buddhist monk, and I find Sri Lanka a very useful place, and it's a time and a place. So there are many factors that go into what is suitable. for practice and for the conditions for the sasana to arise. So when we have a sasana opportunity, if we're wise, we take it. We grasp it with both hands, and you know, we're very entrepreneurial about it. You know, we will put our maximum effort into it. And when I had the opportunity to make a path in this holy life, you know, I've taken it with both hands and give up many aspects of wealth. So I don't believe in this whole mindfulness without mindful stupidity. You know, I it is mindful wisdom. You know, mindful satipanya, and it is with right view. And, you know, it is important to recognize the role of jara in our cultivation of our path. And again, because Mao Tero is interested in this topic of climate change, I sent a link from NASA scientists, which was, you know, just discussing how they know, you know, these climate change effects. And the answer is that they have a lot of measurements that they're doing. And they gather these measurements over many, many years, and they compare, you know, the past to the present. And with the changes that they're measuring, they can make a model. They can figure out what are the main forces. So the sun is shining on the planet Earth. And a lot of this heat of the sun is reflected back into space. The Earth is reflective. As a famous picture of the Earth once put it, it is a blue dot. So our planet is different to other planets. It is actually a shiny blue dot. And this shininess is very important. So the caps, the polar caps, the North Pole, the South Pole, are white, and this reflects a lot of heat back into space. But as the polar caps melt, then the planet becomes more dark. It becomes less reflective. So we can, when we look at the planet from a distance, when we have a satellite out in space and we look back at the planet Earth, we can see that its reflectivity is decreasing. It's becoming more dark. So we can definitely see this since the 90s. And as it becomes darker, it absorbs more and more heat. And once this heat is being absorbed, it tries to escape back into space. But then if there's a blanket of carbon dioxide, of gas, around the Earth, then it acts as like a blanket. Like at night we wear a blanket to keep the heat in from our body. So our body is producing heat, and then the blanket keeps the heat in from radiating out into space. So this carbon dioxide is acting as a blanket. So the blanket keeps the body warmed up. And as the body warms up, the ice melts. As the ice melts, the seas get darker, and it absorbs more and more heat. So most of this heat is being absorbed into the oceans. So though the oceans are vast, they slowly start to heat up. They become warmer. As they become warmer, there's more moisture that goes into the atmosphere. So therefore, we have more rain and more floods and more hurricanes and more snow. So Donald Trump didn't understand that increased amounts of snow didn't mean that the planet was getting colder. It just meant that there was more moisture in the air. So we have to reflect. So just as in this Jara Sutta, it mentions about the power of reflection, the power of wisdom. So it is satipasala that I practice. It is with mindfulness, with wisdom, and with right views. And that's why I look very carefully at these ancient teachings of the Buddha to cultivate right view and keep them in mind. So when I have the opportunity, you know, the mind is seeded with the right information so that when the direct experiences arise in the present moment, then it flourishes on that fertile ground of a bed of right views, even if they're not my own direct experience. They're the teachings of the Buddha, but we need right information. So that's the one thing that I find is I'm not personally clever enough. You know, I'm not a Sammasambuddha. I'm a person following the Arahant path. So the Buddha has been a Tathagata. He has pointed the way, and it is for us, you know, people to kind of follow that way, follow that guidance, and find out for ourselves whether it's true or not. So when I look at the effort of climate change scientists, I appreciate how difficult it is to actually to show all of the effects. It's very easy to measure the carbon dioxide increase. It's very easy to understand the property of carbon dioxide gas, that it has this blanket effect. But to observe and in detail show all of the changes and how it's happening and how it's rolling out in the world is very, very complicated. And, you know, it has become not really a scientific problem anymore, but it's becoming more of a societal problem. Like, what do we do as a society? So there has to be long and complicated, you know, political conversations about how and what we do and where we allocate resources. So in this way, climate change becomes a very difficult matter. You know, ultimately, we just need to bring down the amount of carbon dioxide again. That's in a way, it sounds simple. And in some ways, it's technically difficult. It's easy to burn. It's hard to collect all of those particles of soot and dust and carbon dioxide back again. You know, that's because of a thing called entropy, that things tend to scatter. So it's, you know, it's into wisdom. So sati is that we know that there's carbon dioxide increasing, and panya is what are we going to do about it as a people. So this isn't going to be solved just by being in the moment and you know, smelling Biden's farts or whatever it is that's going on in these meetings. It's going to take a lot of actual reflection and clarity of mind. So there are other aspects that the Buddha taught, like samadhi. And with samadhi, we can calm down our mind. And with mindfulness, we can gather all of the present information. And hopefully we have the right conditions for wisdom to arise and make good decisions as a human civilization.
So with one minute time, we are going to conclude. Thank you for this thing. And this Jara, the topic of the sutta is losing towards the end of the sutta. It's ultimately going to the sammaditti michaditti, not the changing nature. Changing nature is in the climate, in your life, and your mother's life, father's life, everywhere. If you take a short time period, you can make theories. But if you take a long cycle, scientists are just nothing. They are talking about the measurable equipments, but the Buddha is talking about the aeons, arising the releasing time gap, and just like a mat, you are rolling and unrolling. So Buddha has given that. So within that, this short cycle is due to the wrong view of the scientist, or wrong capacity of the equipments, or wrong capacity of interpretation. We are the people succumb to that situation. But when you are mindful, as you mentioned, either sati or asati, either wisdom can happen. We are keeping the subject open. We are not arriving at any decision. But we know you make more sensitive, you make more diligent. It is emotional intelligence. You become weather intelligent. Emotional literacy, weather literacy. This is about the weather. So mindfulness, and good that science they have presented generously, you are presenting generously. I am accumulating and see whether it's measurable or not. Make no any difference. Be mindful and mind your own business. Thank you very much for listening.